This is Facing Fentanyl. Interviews with actual users.
That was my first encounter with fentanyl.
Their experiences.
My nose was to the steering wheel and I could barely stay awake.
But most importantly, the lessons leading them out.
I'm the only person in that picture that's still alive today.
Where they can speak of what it is to be facing fentanyl. Drug and alcohol use has increased exponentially during the epidemic and afterwards. Asking for help is not only a stigma, but it is hard to guide someone as they journey towards recovery and prevention. La Jolla Recovery is a science-based detox and rehab that for over a decade has offered tailored programs for those seeking relief from substance use disorders. For more information or questions regarding addiction, visit lajollarecovery.com. That's L-A-J-O-L-L-A recovery.com. That's again, L-A-J-O-L-L-A recovery.com.
Welcome to another episode of Facing Fentanyl. And before we start, Sarah, I want to thank you for sharing your story. Before we go to how it was and understanding the story, I do want to say I'm looking at a person who's just glowing, who's full of life, who has an amazing things going for her. However, it's important, I think, sharing about this in any type of podcast, that we're not just going to the past to talk about. I think many people want to hear about drugs or addiction because it gets really dark. But the reason we're going to go to the past is because we want to shine light on how amazing it is to change, to have, to what were those definitive moments that made this transformation possible? And to not just stay into the darkness, how we're going to make it back. But I think it's really important to humanize the story, because I'm sure there was so much more of you before there was fentanyl. And before we start, for anybody who doesn't know about fentanyl, give us just a very small summary of what this is.
Well, first, I wanted to thank you so much for having me. Oh. It's truly an honor. And so fentanyl is a opioid that is being used because it's cheaper. And people that are using opioids such as heroin, they're actually switching to fentanyl. And it just has such a higher potency because it's not, and since it's being cut with, you know, these other drugs, people are overdosing and dying. You know, there's millions and millions of people that are dying every day from fentanyl overdose.
So this is
very, very dangerous.
So it is extremely potent. It is everywhere. It's not an accident. There are users who are actually looking for it. It's
yes.
No longer of like, oh, that got thrown into my fill in the blank. Like this is, and it's causing overdoses that's hard to describe to a public, that even ambulances don't have the enough Narcan to counteract the effects of this drug.
Right. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, it's taking, you know, we have the Narcan has two doses in each kit. And so what's being found is that it is so potent that just one reversal of the overdose, like one or two shots in each kit, is not enough. You know, they have to use more to try to bring people back to life once they've overdosed.
I don't even have the words, but so let's take this to the past. I'm seeing a young woman that's shining. Tell me, before anybody gets into fentanyl, I'm sure nobody dreams or wants to have that life. Tell me life before. How was life growing up before there were even drugs in your story, Sarah?
So I grew up, I had a pretty, well, I thought it was pretty functional household. I mean, you know, my parents were together. I have two siblings. And so growing up, I was really into academics. I was very into sports. I played, you know, I ended up going to college and playing college softball. And so my life, I would say up until about 21 when I finished college, was pretty, you know, happy and all for the most part. And where it kind of took a turn was, I think I just kept my life so busy all those years, and you know, I was doing sports, I was in school, and I think that, you know, for me personally, with my story, I got out of college, I came back home, and I started hanging around with a group of people, and so those people were doing painkillers, you know, recreationally, I guess. And so that's kind of, you know, how I got started into that, you know, into really going into my addiction. Now, of course, you know, you can look back and say, okay, well, maybe there was things going on in my life that, you know, after I've done some extensive, like, trauma work and really sat with another person, you know, whether it be a clinician or somebody that I could just relate with and just kind of go over my story. You know, I'm sure that there were signs that, you know, maybe I had a problem before I even picked up the substances. So, I mean, it's neither here nor there, but yeah, I mean, I would say for the most part, I had a really good life. I had a loving family, and I still do to this day. And, thank God, you know, that they are back in my life, because there was a point where they weren't in my life for a long time when I was struggling.
So what I'm hearing is that it, and by the way, with other individuals that we've had in our show, they've been able to say that it's almost normalized. Prescriptions seem to be more accessible than alcohol when there's recreation or substance use in teenage years. Would you say that's the case, that it's just kind of sometimes it's easier to get prescriptions out of somebody's medicine cabinet than buying alcohol?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I think that it is easier to, it's easily accessible. And, you know, not knowing, especially if family members are not, you know, if they don't have experience dealing with somebody who's addicted to substances, it wouldn't even be a thought to hide, you know, prescription painkillers or any type of narcotic that's being, you know, that's prescribed to a family or somebody in the family. They wouldn't even think to hide it, you know? And so, yeah, I would say it is easily accessible in the homes, because, you know, if you don't know or you haven't dealt with somebody who has a problem, you wouldn't even think to, you know, go and hide it or, make sure it's not accessible to younger kids.
And how was it shared?
It's easier to get.
I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I was going to say, yes, and it would be fair to say it's easier to get.
So having access obviously increases the chances of being able to be exposed to it. How was it? Was it at a party? How was it shared? Did somebody say, like, oh, you should try this? And so social pressure is also very, I mean, it's real.
Yeah, it's definitely real. And I was, you know, I was 21 at the time, which you can say, you know, I'm an adult at that point. And so, and for me, it was, yeah, it seemed like everybody else was doing it. I, you know, liked this guy that was doing it and I think selling it. And I can't even imagine for, you know, because I started, if you think about it, the average where people are starting their drug use, I mean, it's, you know, 14, 15 years old. I was actually late to the game.
Right. So what you're saying is it's becoming now younger that people are exposed to drug use, which in this case was prescription. Was it opiate based? Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you remember what it was?
Oh yeah. It was, that I was using. It was oxycodone, 30 milligram.
So
pills,
oxys, and so you're attracted to someone, you're already kind of have that pressure as well, and you're like, of course I'm gonna hang out with everybody,
right? Yeah.
at that moment, did you feel some level of discomfort? Did you feel, or had you used alcohol before? Had you already been exposed to other forms of intoxication?
Yes, I had. So I was drinking alcohol. I had drank in college. I had drank a little bit in high school. So I didn't really use too many other like drugs or anything growing up because, you know, I was in sports. But and I remember when I had first taken the pill, and I actually, I mean, it was a round pill. I remember it was blue, and I remember having to break it in half and then break it again so that I would have a quarter of it, because in the beginning I would get sick from it, because if you're not used to having,
I'm hearing you. So if you're not used to having,
so if you're not used to having the prescription or this painkiller that's used for people that are in, you know, that have cancer or have been in serious car accidents, or if they have, you know, medically necessity that need this pill, for somebody who hadn't taken it, I got really nauseous in the beginning. I remember I would actually vomit, but it set something off in my brain that it was almost like once I had started it, I didn't want to stop. I would you know, overcome that sickness feeling to the euphoria. And then I was hooked ever since. And I was just on the run after that.
So past the nauseating experience of opiates, which, by the way, it's very common. Mm-hmm. There was, and you're mentioning you were involved in sports and you were involved in a scholar life, and that stress there must be a lot of stress going on being young, trying to perform, sports, school. Were you away from home in college? Was this in college?
Yeah, I went away to college in upstate. I went upstate New York to school at one of the SUNYs up there. And but I think what really took a turning point too was that my parents were together my whole life until I turned 18. So when I was going off to school, I had, you know, senior prom. I had my senior day for softball. You know, I had all these things going on and such, like, you know, big points in my life with a lot of pressure and things like that. And my parents were, you know, splitting up and falling apart. So then I kind of went, I don't think I dealt with those issues. And then I kind of went away to college to maybe get away from that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then I was kind of, and I was in school and I met, you know, different people and I was just kind of away from it. So I did that for about 2 years, I went back and then I came home, and that was when I had started with the dabbling into the prescriptions.
So the image of structure and stability, which tends to be from when we're children and family, that's, you know, you don't even have the time to, it sounds like you don't have the time to even convey. Is it common nowadays to share about challenges and struggle and having that support? Would you say that perhaps even colleges as someone starts recreating a family away from your family, it sounds like it's there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and I feel like today there is a little bit more. It's so, of course, like addiction, it still has the stigma attached to it, and mental health too. But I do believe that on the forefront there is a lot more resources available, you know. And I work in a facility, and I do, you know, outreach to hospitals and colleges and things like that. And so I do see that they have it more accessible today. Now, was it available in, you know, 2011, 2012? When I probably not. I didn't even, you know, think to look for it, but because I don't know. But yeah, so it probably wasn't available as much, but I think that there might be, I mean, probably not enough. There's probably not enough, you know, like, and not enough resources or not enough people kind of, you know, advocating to get help for your mental health or your substance abuse.
So nowadays it's much more common. You yourself are involved now in mental health. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to you, and you have a lot of empathy towards people who are wanting to reach out for help. The other thing is that you're doing something that technically is illegal. So you're not going to go like, excuse me, I just did something illegal this weekend, had a negative experience, don't really know how to make sense of it, you know. But so you were mentioning you tried that. There was something very soothing that came of it. So it wasn't all negative.
No, it wasn't all negative. I think the physical part when you first started doing it, but then it was this sense of euphoria and just kind of escaping your current, you don't really feel anything. So you're kind of just numb. And then once, you know, once I started to feel that way, I would chase that feeling for the rest of my addiction and I'd never get it again.
So numb was great. It was so drastically different from before.
Right.
You didn't.
Yeah, it was different. It was just something that I hadn't experienced. So for me, that was just an escape. And yeah, I mean, I would search for it. Once I started that feeling, I would search for it for the next about 7 years that I was in my addiction.
So you were looking for it, kind of like, I'm looking forward to the next weekend. How is coming down from it? Does the body, did you start craving it right away, or was it something that came with use?
It was something that came with, as time progressed, you know, my addiction had progressed. So in the beginning, you know, it was something that wasn't used every day, even though so fentanyl and any kind of opioid is a physically addicting drug, you know? And so once you start taking it regularly and you try to stop, you go through physical and mental withdrawals like no other. I mean, it's the only substance that, you know, because with alcohol and benzo use, it's actually fatal to withdrawal. That's why they have, like, you know, medical assistant for detox, because it's dangerous to detox off of those substances. But opioids, it's, you know, there's a saying, it's like, you know, you feel like you're going to die, but you're not actually going to die. But it's so bad.
Which must be like worse.
Right. And it's the funny part about it is that people that are in their addiction, you know, because you go through, or people that relapse and you go through these withdrawals, it's almost like, you know, you'll get through it, or just, you know, you hear about the people that relapse all the time. And so you get through this physical, awful withdrawal, but it's a disease that, like, it takes over your brain and it makes you want to use again. And then you'll put yourself in that detox over and over again, because you're still sick and chasing that high and that craving that, you know, it's not going to, you're never going to fulfill again. So I didn't start off right away doing it every day, but it quickly, I would say probably after about a month or two, I was a regular everyday user because there's such a.
Within 2 months, you were already consuming it often.
Yes, every day.
So it is so opiates are very, very powerful, not only in the effect of reducing pain, and not only physical, but psychological.
Yes.
And that sense of numbness must be something that must be a relief to the stressors, to psychological challenges that are happening in these years that are very key to quality relationships, to self-esteem. Are you still in this picture, hanging on to school? How are sports and how is school doing once this is becoming a habit?
So I had already finished school, and I had already finished, like, I had graduated already at that point.
Wow.
And I had started working at this good job that I had landed. And so when I first started, so it was, you know, there was like months in between from when school and softball had ended and to where my addiction really took off. I had accumulated, you know, I had gotten a vehicle, I had secured an apartment, I was making good money, I was living with a roommate. And once I started becoming, you know, an active everyday user, you'll slowly, like, I, you know, you, all those things that you've worked for, I mean, it takes everything from you. You know, it took the car, it took the job, it took all the things that I had worked for up until that point. It took it away, because you'll put all your money, you'll put everything you have, you'll sell your soul to get more.
But let me get this straight. Before you're getting to that, so you're independent, you just finished college, you have a job, you're making a living in New York.
Yes.
So to whomever has kind of like a fentanyl user looks like, no, that's not true. Like there's education. I'm talking to someone who is who is very clear in her communication, who is all about success and independence. Is it frustrating? Did you have moments where you said, I'm never going to do this again, or kind of like, this will stop someday?
Drug and alcohol use has increased exponentially during the epidemic and afterwards. Asking for help is not only a stigma, but it is hard to guide someone as they journey towards recovery and prevention. La Jolla Recovery is a science-based detox and rehab that for over a decade has offered tailored programs for those seeking relief from substance use disorders. For more information or questions regarding addiction, visit lajollarecovery.com. That's LAJOLLA recovery.com. That's again, LAJOLLA recovery.com. This podcast continues in the next episode.
This is Facing Fentanyl.